Now we've come to another section. In fact, it's a brand new section of Leviticus. We have here immorality condemned. And we have the amplification of the seventh commandment. Now, up to this point in Leviticus, we've only dealt with laws concerning ceremonial cleansing. All rules regulated the ritual of religion, and those of the home also. But here, beginning with this chapter, God deals with the moral aspect of the lives of His people, so that now chapters 18, 19, and 20 actually constitute a special section which applies the Ten Commandments to life situations. In other words, we're getting right down to the nitty-gritty, friends. Now, this section opens with a preamble. Here at the 18th chapter, we'll see it. It closes with one, the last part of the 20th chapter. Now, these are very important as they give the reason for the restrictions and regulations of the social life of His people. Now, we're living in a day when the moral foundations have been broken up and removed. And the question arises, who makes the rules? And what is right and wrong? And that's the question of the sneering skeptic and cynic. But the preamble here offers a twofold explanation. In fact, we'll need the postscript also. But let me read now, beginning with verse 1. And I think I should read verses 1 through 5, because there we have preamble to social prohibitions. Then we'll see sexual relations with relatives forbidden, then sundry sexual sins prohibited, and then offspring forbidden to be offered to Molech, then perversion of sex prohibited, and then the nations in Palestine were cast out for committing these sins. Now, this is a very important section. Why? You and I are living in a day that they call it a sexual revolution. I wonder if they've ever read the 18th chapter of the book of Leviticus. May I say to you, nothing new about it at all. They're doing nothing new today at all. There's absolutely nothing new today in this field at all. Now let's look at this, and I'm reading now, beginning with verse 1 of the 18th chapter of Leviticus. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, I am the Lord your God. After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein ye dwelt, shall ye not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, whither I bring you, shall ye not do, neither shall ye walk in their ordinances. Ye shall do my judgments and keep mine ordinances to walk therein. I am the Lord your God. Ye shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am the Lord. Now, let's look at this for a moment, because this is very important to see. And the reason God now is going to deal with this, He says, you've come out of Egypt, and they broke all the commandments down there. They didn't have them, but they were doing the things that the commandments forbid. And you're getting ready to go into the land of Canaan. So many people think when the children of Israel got out of Egypt and went into the promised land, that it was all milk and honey. It wasn't. There were some other things there. And there were some Canaanites there. And God saw that they were caught, as we would say today, using the common colloquialism of the day, they were caught between the devil and the deep blue sea, or between a rock and a hard place. The Egyptians back up and the Canaanites ahead of them. And both of them grossly immoral. Why, friends, we call it a sexual revolution. May I say to you, this was just doing the same old thing in the land of Egypt, or shall we say, doing what comes naturally. Now, with that in mind, will you notice that in these first five verses, God says, I am the Lord your God. Then he says, I am the Lord. All right, where is that skeptic that said, who makes the rules? God says, he makes the rules. Somebody says, well, I don't want to follow them. Fine. God still makes the rules. And breaking the Ten Commandments is wrong because God says it's wrong. And that ought to be enough to satisfy the heart of the child of God. Now, the skeptic could not be satisfied with any argument because he intends to make his own rules as he's his own God. And by the way, if you can create a universe, I would think you'd have to have a whole planetary system. You'd need a sun and a moon and a few stars. And if you can make that, then you make your own Ten Commandments. But long as you're living in God's world, breathing his air, using his sunshine, drinking his water, walking on his earth, and you're not paying rent, he says you're going to find out these are the things that I command, and if you break them, you'll pay. And my friend, you'll pay. You may not be arrested by the local police. In fact, the matter is they won't arrest you, but you see, you're going to have to stand before him someday. Then he gives a second reason for following God's rules. Now, over in Leviticus 20, at the end of this section, verse 26, listen to him. And ye shall be holy unto me, for I the Lord am holy, and have severed you from other people that ye should be mine. Now, God demands that his people be holy. Purity in all life situations is the command of God. And the child of God is not under the Mosaic system as a way of life. But these regulations are still binding upon his daily life. Now listen to what Paul says in the epistles. The things that God says are immoral in the Ten Commandments, God still says they're immoral. He hasn't changed on that. Listen to this. 1 Thessalonians 4:5-7. Not in the lust of concupiscence, even as the Gentiles which know not God, that no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any matter, because that the Lord is the avenger of all such, as we also have forewarned you and testified, for God hath not called us unto uncleanness, but unto holiness. That's Paul to the Thessalonians, and by the way, it's to you. You're a child of God. And then over in Ephesians, the 4:17-19. Now listen to Paul. He's speaking to you and me. This I say therefore and testify in the Lord, that you henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness to work all uncleanness with greediness. I could give more quotations. 1 Corinthians, 2 Peter. These are things that the child of God in any age is called to live a holy life. Know ye not that you're the temple of God, the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are. Now, God's calling us to holiness. As a friend of mine, who's quite a wag, as a preacher, he said to me, he says, why, even the holiness people are not emphasizing holiness today. Well, I don't know whether they are or not, but somebody needs to emphasize holiness. God asks you to be holy. Then there's another great truth here that I don't want you to miss, friends. And it's this, because right now, great many say, if you're going to reach this crowd, you've got to go down and live with them. You've got to go down and be like they are. You've got to go down and just be among them. I don't want to call names, but a famous evangelist went down on the beach to be among them, and he walked on the streets of New York City to be among them. He didn't reach them. And today, there are several organizations that have gone down and tried to be like them, And you want to know something? They're like them. And the crowd down there is not like holy people either. May I say to you, God's called us to holiness. And England was a pretty wicked place. But you remember that John Wesley's followers were called holy people. In fact, they were called Methodists because of the fact their methods were different than that of the world. Now, will you notice as we move in here that God says, I am Jehovah. Somebody says, I'm not a Christian. I'm not interested. May I say to you, he's declaring his sovereignty. I said a moment ago, you've been breathing his air. Make your own, friends. Make your own universe. Then you make your own Ten Commandments. Well, he's running this one. And then he says, I am your God. And if you're reconciled to God, you'll want to please him. And the child of God today is to be filled with the Spirit that he might not live this kind of a life. Now, there are sexual relations with relatives forbidden. He says here now, verse 6, will you listen to this? None of you shall approach to any that is near of kin to him to uncover their nakedness. Why? I'm the Lord. You see, the blanket statement is made that no person is to have sexual relations with a near relative. And this entire section amplifies the seventh commandment. Here it refers to anyone who has the same blood relationship as the other person. And he goes on now, he's specific. The nakedness of thy father, the nakedness of thy mother, shalt thou not uncover. She's thy mother. Thou shalt not uncover her nakedness. The nakedness of thy father's wife shalt thou not uncover. It is thy father's nakedness. Now, this warns against disgusting incest. Yet it was in the Corinthian church, and Paul condemned it with great feeling. In 1 Corinthians 5:1, he says, it's reported commonly that there is fornication among you, and such fornication as is not so much as named among the Gentiles, that one should have his father's wife. These are things talked about today, aren't they? God talks about them too. And he lets you know what he thinks about them. Don't tell me today that God hasn't. He has spelled it out, friends. Nobody can make a mistake about this. Now, he goes through this, and I'm not going to read all these verses. Beginning with verse 9, the nakedness of thy sister, the daughter of thy father, the daughter of thy mother, whether she be born at home or born abroad, even their nakedness thou shalt not uncover, and so on and so on. Fact of the matter is, he covers them all. Why? You see, the different human relationship which are established by blood or marriage, they're dealt with specifically in this section. Why? Well, relatives are thrown together in a domestic situation in which adultery could be practiced. And God put up these barriers to prevent it. You see, Egypt practiced these sins. After all, Pharaoh and the Ptolemies, they practiced intermarriage of brother with sister. I think that Cleopatra was married to her brother, was she not? Abraham married his half-sister. Cain and Seth both married their own sisters. You see, at the beginning, it was not sinful, but as this awful, poisonous sin got in the bloodstream, why, it was actually dangerous. I remember years ago that in the South, it was a tendency for families to intermarry. The governor's family in Tennessee intermarried, and they turned out some strange creatures. The pastor of a church that I came to later on, he married one of the daughters of the governor. And I went holding meetings down in Middle Tennessee. I was asked to go see two of those daughters. They were old maids that had been born in that home of this preacher. They were the most intelligent women, I think, that I've ever talked to. And they living way up there in the hills. They knew what was going on in this world. They could carry on a good conversation. Well, you say, well, what's wrong about it? Well, friends, I was warned about this. The only thing that was unusual, they had to shoo the chickens off the chair in the living room so I could sit down. Then you had to be pretty careful. And while I was sitting there, the old cow stuck her head around the door from the dining room, and they had the little calves They just had all their animals in there, and you must admit that's unusual. Well, that family was unusual, friends. May I say to you, God says don't do it. You don't get by with it. And they don't get by with it, by the way. You'll find that all the way through the Scripture, God warns against these things. And today it's positively dangerous, of course, as well as being immoral. He gives certain sundry sexual sins prohibited, 17 through 20. That's the label I've put on this section. And he says, thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of a woman and her daughter, neither shalt thou take her son's daughter, and so on. Now, this relationship, you see, is not by blood, but by marriage. And because of the close relationship of the wife to a daughter or son, any marriage is forbidden. Now, I'm of the opinion that this means that a man's not to have two sisters, even, at the same time. In Leviticus 18, in this section here, in the Berkeley version, it says, do not expose the nakedness of both a woman and a daughter, neither take her son's daughter or daughter's daughter to expose her their blood relatives. It's incest. While your wife is still living, do not take her sister for a rival to expose her nakedness. You see, this was the problem poor old Jacob faced in having two sisters as wives. But remember, that was before the Ten Commandments were given. It wasn't until Moses' day that these were put down. And they've just come out of Egypt where all this was practiced. Then we're told in verse 19, thou shalt not approach unto a woman to uncover nakedness as long as she is put apart for uncleanness. That is something I don't care to go in on the radio, but may I say to you, there are doctors that believe that's the way venereal disease came in. My friend, you're not beating God at this. I don't care who you are today. You're not getting by with it. Verse 20, moreover, thou shalt not lie carnally with thy neighbor's wife to defile thyself with her. And believe me, God's throwing up the bulwarks to protect the home from the licentious practices of the heathen round about them. Purity of living was to be the badge of God's family. There was a holy place in the tabernacle for worship, and the home was a holy place in the nation for living. And believe me, there is a great deal in the New Testament on this. Read 1 Corinthians 7 in connection with this. Now, here is something that is quite interesting. They were forbidden to offer their children to Moloch. Verse 21, and thou shalt not let any of thy seed, that is, thy children, pass through the fire to Moloch, neither shalt thou profane the name of thy God, I am the Lord. This seems to be a little out of place, but it's not. And actually, in that day, in some places, the image of old Moloch was heated, red hot, and the bodies of children were placed in the arms. And you can imagine how horrible that was. There are those that believe that that could never have happened. In 2 Kings, we're told that the Avites made Nabhaz and Tartak and the Sepharvites burn their children in fire. And Jeremiah 7:31 confirms it. Now, this terrible practice means to profane the name of the Lord. The unnatural brutality of this pagan rite was a deep profaning the name of the true God. Because God loves children. The Lord Jesus says, let them come to me. And then you have the perversion of sex prohibited. Now today we find the church right here in downtown Los Angeles. A church put on a dance. For anybody, it would be a little out of line, according to my book. But do you know who they put it on for? Sexual perverts. I'm told they had over 700 there. And it was so disgusting that a hard-boiled newspaper writer went down to write it up and walked out. And yet the church engaged in that. God condemns it. Read the first chapter of Romans, my friend. The depravity that's mentioned here is common today in the great cities of New York, Chicago, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, and they're all like Sodom and Gomorrah. And that's one reason, friends, makes me weep today when I see the way my country's going. I love this country. I was born here, and I'm American. And I hate to see these dirty, filthy, immoral people bringing us into judgment today. And believe me, friends, the judgment of God is already upon us. We can't have peace abroad, and we can't have peace at home. Why? God says, "There is no peace, saith my God, to the wicked." And he said that three times in Isaiah. Now, let me move on. Verse 23, "Neither shalt thou lie with any beast to defile thyself." And if you don't think that's being practiced, then you don't know Los Angeles through the police department. They can tell you. Now, we are told here the nations in Palestine were cast out because they committed these same sins. And a lot of these soft-hearted and soft-headed preachers today, they just weep because God put out the Moabites and he put out the Canaanites too. He put them all out of that land. And why did he put them out? Because he said, "The land is defiled, therefore I do visit the iniquity thereof upon it, and the land itself vomiteth out its inhabitants." Well, what was taking place was the land couldn't even stand him. And today it's well known that that land was eaten up with venereal disease. Why do you suppose God told them not to even take a wedge of gold or touch a garment in the city of Jericho? The reason was because I think a harlot by the name of Rahab could have told you. They were guilty of the vilest sins that were imaginable. And don't you think God put them out for a good reason? After all, if a tenant doesn't pay rent, they can be put out. And God happened to own the land. He'll tell them in this chapter a little later on. He says, "The land is mine. I'm letting you have it, but the land is mine." They only have a 99-year lease. That's all. And that's the way you and I occupy this earth down here. 70 promised to us down here. That's the only lease. The land is God's. And if he doesn't like the way you're doing, that's his business, not your business. And it'll be well for us to make our business his business, because his business is the one that will prevail.